The connection between you and your therapist matters. That's why Alma focuses on helping you find the right someone to talk to, not just anyone. When you browse their online directory, you can filter your search by what you want to focus on, like anxiety, relationships, or big life transitions. You can also specify preferences around gender, race, faith, and more to help you find someone who's more likely to understand where you're coming from. Alma also makes it easy for therapists to navigate insurance. That's why 95% of providers in their directory accept insurance for sessions, so you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit HelloAlma.com/notjustanyone to schedule a free consultation today. That's HelloAlma.com/notjustanyone.
Reclaiming the narrative is so important because it teaches us what we're made of, where we come from, and what we're capable of. And then as artists, especially Black artists, we teach with our work, we keep company with our work, we inspire movements with our work.
Visual art. It's something that has always played a fundamental role in Black movements. The Harlem Renaissance, the Black Arts Movement, the Black Lives Matter movement of today. In each era, artists have offered their vision and skill, wielding the power of art to inspire and uplift, to educate and communicate, to shift Black consciousness towards a direction of love, self-respect, healing, and freedom. I'm Jay from Push Black, and today on Black History Year, we're talking Black art and liberation. Now, whether you're an artist or not, this episode's for you, because in some way or another, art has influenced your life, guaranteed. Maybe you grew up with famous Black paintings like Ernie Barnes' The Sugar Shack in your home. Or maybe you've passed by a building with a mural honoring a Black legend. However you've experienced it, art is all around you, and there's value in embracing it. To break it down for us, we're talking with Roslyn McGary, a Compton-based artist and producer whose solo and collaborative work has been featured in shows and museums nationwide, including the Los Angeles Museum of African Art, Hampton University's Art Museum, the New York National Black Fine Arts Show, and many others. In 2016, she founded Sepia Collective, an artist-run organization whose mission is to engage artists, build community, and empower youth. Later, we'll talk with her about the collective's iconic Black Panther art exhibitions, done in collaboration with former Panthers who are still using art to serve the people and create change. This is an exciting conversation about the power of Black creativity. Let's get to it. Roslyn, what does Black liberation look like to you?
To me, Black liberation looks like freedom. Freedom to express as an artist the way I'd like to express on any given day, at any given moment, freedom to care for each other, care about each other, freedom of movement, to go where we please, when we please, how we please, and to be able to share knowledge about our culture with each other uninhibited.
And how do you see your work as working towards Black liberation?
My work with iconic Black Panther is threefold, and we're learning as we go, right? It kind of develops, and then we look back at it and say, wow, this is developing in this direction. But I will say that iconic Black Panther, it's a series of multi-city art exhibitions. We've done three already. The first was in Oakland in 2016, the second one in Los Angeles, and the third in Chicago. The fourth was to be this year in New York. I say multi-city exhibitions because it's not a traveling exhibition. Each exhibition is different and reflects the city and the city's history with artists, with cultural movements, with social equity movements. Each city has its own personality, and those personalities are able to express in the production of these art exhibitions. So I would say that reclaiming our narrative, and in this case, the narrative of the Black Panther Party and artists and educators coming together and making space for that to happen would be number one. Number two would be moving into the educational space. We work with educators in every city that we show, we exhibit, and they bring some portion or aspect of our exhibits to their campuses and then build programming around it to engage their students. So I think that's a huge, huge part of Iconic Black Panther that, you know, has developed organically from the beginning of us doing these exhibits that I didn't necessarily know was as possible as it is. And then raising money for Black Panther alumni in need. There still are Black Panther political prisoners in prison right now. Some have been in prison over 45 years, and raising money to support them and their families. And also when they come out, raising money for support. So those are the kind of the three ways I think that these art exhibitions work towards Black liberation.
So you mentioned in terms of Black liberation, freedom of expression was important to you. Can you dive into that a little more? Why is that important to you, and why should it be important to all of us in the community, artists or non-artists?
As an artist, you know, as a Black artist, as a Black woman artist, you find when you're very young, when you're starting out, that you have expectations from your community. You have expectations from your family. Usually those expectations are don't become an artist, but you know, you have expectations that you bump into, right? So freedom of expression evolved for me from, man, you know, sometimes I just want to paint a flower. I just want to draw a flower. That's it. But you can also be judged like, well, what kind of artist are you? You're a Black woman and you don't have nothing to say. My work has always been my personal work has been very private. And it really is about, I call it the emotional layers of being a Black woman and kind of navigating different spaces as a Black woman in this society, in this time. I found that producing art exhibitions is in itself a work of art, and it's a collaborative work of art. So you're working with other people. And that expression is, I believe, more important because it reaches more people. And it also empowers the artists who are working together and the educators that are working together and the producers that are working together. You know, whoever's coming together to kind of produce these exhibitions that we have defined as, you know, hey, we're going to do this thing and we're going to bring people together to talk about things that maybe are uncomfortable to talk about. We're going to engage, you know, the community in these ways with programming. We're going to, you know, and what do we want to do? How do we want to do it? And kind of having those conversations where we get together and say, first and foremost, what do we as Black people, it's usually mostly Black people with Iconic Black Panther, of course, what do we want to do? What do we want to say? And how do we want to say it? And starting there is liberating.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from the people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What led you to create Iconic Black Panther?
I would have to go back to probably 2013. 2013, a group of four curators got together and we produced a show called Rise, Love, Revolution, the Black Panther Party. And we held it in LA and turnout was amazing. And it was a fundraiser. You know, we planned from the beginning that it would be a fundraiser. And at that time, it was the largest group exhibition interpreting the Black Panther Party that had ever been done. And so the turnout was so great and there was such possibility with it, but it was exhausting. You know, it was all those things when you start a new thing, but it was amazing. And it was full of love and it was beautiful. And so we all disbanded after that. And it was a couple of Black Panthers who had worked with us, Gene Washington and Hank Jones, who came to me ultimately and said, hey, we need to keep doing this. This is important. And so they're kind of the fathers of iconic Black Panther. And so I started off with plans to produce iconic. And I knew that I could not do it alone. And I had plans to start Sepia. My art organization is based in Compton and it centers artists of color. And so I had plans to do that. And this just became the right time. We opened in 2016 in Oakland for the 50th anniversary of the Black Panther Party.
That's amazing. So can you describe what people will see at the iconic Black Panther exhibit?
So our plan next time is New York. So basically, the first thing that we do is seek out a space. So some amazing space that can hopefully house the people who will come, the thousands of people who will come, but also the wonderful work of over 50 artists. So what we do is we seek out a curator, a local curator for each exhibit. Our curators to date have been women, and I want to carry on that tradition, women of color. And so we seek out a curator, and that curator has, of course, a relationship with local artists. The curator chooses artists, but we also put out a call to artists to kind of level the field. We like a variety of artists from well-established to brand new. Our exhibit in Chicago, our youngest artist was 22. Our oldest artist was 96. And so face, curator, and then dream, right? Then imagination. The Black Panther alumni in each city weighs in from the first meeting that we have about what they'd like to say, what they'd like to see, and how they'd like to participate, join with us, partner with us. And those conversations usually involve outreach and our programming. So when people come to the exhibit, what they see is an expression not just of the artists that are interpreting either the Black Panther Party or their own activism. They're communicating about things that they're involved in or want to highlight, right? It's also the exhibition space and the people that are involved there. It's educators and universities, local universities that involve themselves, and members of the Black Panther Party.
And I saw that Emory Douglas has been involved as well. And that's someone that as soon as I learned about him and his work, I've been trying to learn as much as I can ever since. Very inspiring stuff, I think, for any creative person who is trying to say something. What was it like working with him on this project? And for our listeners, who was Emory Douglas and what was his role in the Panthers?
I get sent to different Black Panthers, and it really does feel to me the same way that it feels, you know, when you go into a place where you haven't been in the South, maybe, and they're like, okay, well, you got some cousins down there, so you need to go and you need to say hi. And so Emory Douglas, he was the Minister of Culture for the Black Panther Party. He is an artist. And you can see his work on every or almost every Black Panther newsletter, and then within the newsletters as well. He views art as a teaching tool and a call to action. So he knew that he was using his work to communicate in very plain terms to people who either may not have time to read or could not read well, to break down what was going on, what was in that newsletter, and what the Black Panther Party was working on or communicating about at that time. And still today, he still works. And so he's accessible to artists and activists all over the Bay Area. The first time I met him at a fundraiser. He was sitting, eating, and he just said, yeah, sit down, have a seat. Let's, you know, let's talk. I told him, you know, I wanted to do these exhibits. And so he hit me to the history of some other exhibits that have happened about the Black Panther Party and how they looked. And, you know, when they were art exhibits, they naturally centered around Emory and Emory's work. And so what we were doing on the scale that we were doing it hasn't been done in quite that way. And so his guidance and all other Black Panther alumni guidance, as far as just kind of keeping to the history, or no, this didn't happen that way, it happened this way. So it's really like a dream come true. Mm. But yeah, that's Emory Douglas. He's our intersection of activism and arts. He is that personified.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
So you mentioned previously reclaiming the narrative. Speak more on that. Why is that important for Black artists, for us as a people? And in what ways is this exhibit or your work working towards that?
Well, reclaiming the narrative, I think in this particular case, of course, is beyond important because we see the impact of others controlling that narrative about the Black Panther Party. We see the damage that it's done, the complete rendering of families and communities because of the vilification of the Black Panther Party. And yet it's a group of people who I think average age 19 when they joined, when they started their work. There's no corner of the globe that hasn't been impacted, you know, inspired, influenced by those then young people who I'll say most of them are still doing community work. They're still working for the people. And so they were cast as people who just wanted to kill white people. They weren't cast or acknowledged as people who stood in the gap for their community, you know, for other people. They created 23 survival programs. I've been told now it's over 23, so I don't have the full list. They set about feeding, protecting our communities, educating our communities, you know, studying sickle cell disease in our communities, starting clinics in our communities, you know, all those things. You know, they were doing, and they were doing it and having to protect each other at the same time. So reclaiming the narrative around that is, you know, so important because it teaches us what we're made of, where we come from, right? And what we're capable of. And then as artists, you know, I think that, you know, artists, especially Black artists, brown artists, we teach, you know, with our work, or we keep company with our work, or we inspire movements with our work. And so, you know, when we look at what's happening with Black Lives Matter and how they've been vilified over the years, and, you know, it's kind of the same thing happening all over again. You know, there's this force for good. All they started with was saying Black Lives Matter. Right. And now all of a sudden, I don't know exactly when it happened, but now all of a sudden they're a terrorist organization. Right. So you see how these things happen in real time when you learn about how those things happen to the Black Panther Party. It becomes necessary to talk about it, to keep those conversations going and to engage, you know, especially young people in those conversations. And then it becomes important to create space for us and, you know, as artists and each other so that we can continue to do that.
So what is the role of the Black artists and Black art in the Black liberation struggle?
I think that's a choice. You know, I think that artists have to make that choice. And I really strongly stand by an artist's choice to involve themselves or not involve themselves into whatever, you know, to whatever level that they choose. I feel that very, very strongly. But I also feel like as Black artists, you inevitably are going to bump up against some challenges and some struggles, you know, because you are Black, because you are brown, because you are a woman, because you are all those things. You're going to bump up against struggle. And those things tend to kind of hone us into activists in our own ways. You know, I think for me, it's producing exhibits is when I'm able to let my activism, my expression free in that regard. But when I'm painting, I'd never looked at myself as an activist. You know, I looked at myself as someone who just wanted to talk about these things I was feeling. But inevitably, other people who are touched by what you're doing are going to come and say, you have done this for me. You have helped me with this. And so I don't know how we can avoid it. You know, I don't know how Black artists can avoid some type of activism, even if it's just advocacy for other artists who've gone through some of the things that they've gone through.
During the Black Arts Movement, there was a push by those involved, I think most notably Larry Neal and Amiri Baraka, to call for Black artists to reject European standards and create our own in terms of art, artwork, and creativity. What are your thoughts?
Well, when you talk about liberation, I think that rejecting European standards is absolutely liberating. I think everybody should try it. I think it's absolutely liberating. Personally, what's been really liberating for me as an artist producing these exhibits and also working in my own city now in Compton to create arts programming is that I am truly interested in having these conversations amongst ourselves. You know, I want to talk about these things amongst us. I want to learn from Black artists who were there before me and how did they deal with these things and what was this like? And when I put pen to paper, I am most assuredly talking about what my idea of beautiful is. And so I think that as much as we are the product of this society, there's so much within us as expressives and creatives that we want to get out. We owe it to ourselves, I'll say, to throw off all those dictates.
So interested in what artists you look up to. Who are some of your favorites that you think are doing things in a way you admire or even aspire to?
That's a hard one off the top of my head. I mean, of course, Emery Douglas, Dr. Samela Lewis, of course, Elizabeth Catlett, Charles Alston's work, Anne Tanksley. I don't know. I could probably go on and on and on. I could go on and on.
Are there any sort of unifying themes across the folks you just mentioned that make you drawn towards their work or the type that they do, I guess, as a group of those folks you mentioned?
I mean, I'm an emotional painter, you know. I'm an emotional painter and emotional drawer, so I keep coming back to artists who move me. Probably I'm seeing some things I aspire to. I see the simplest stroke captures immense beauty and emotion. And I don't really know how to put that into words, but it can be the simplest thing. And I aspire to that. I want people to cry. They see one stroke and I'm done, you know, but, you know, really the least amount of strokes, actions towards whatever piece, you know, and that piece captured the entirety of whatever it is I want to, you know, say. So I think that those are artists who do that.
Almost like a minimalist approach to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The art world is pretty white, like overwhelmingly white. What has been your experience navigating that?
You know, it's funny. I am not the poster child for navigating the art world. First and foremost, I did not go to art school. I always drew all my life. And it was my solace as a young person. I was an introvert. And so I took art courses in college, but I didn't go on. And I didn't have the confidence when I was there to major in art. I was like, maybe I'll work in a museum or work in a gallery. You know, I just wanted to be around it. I didn't have that confidence to say I'm an artist. And it wasn't until a couple of years after I graduated that I started my career. But before that, I worked at Sotheby's and I worked at a local Black gallery in Oakland, Samuel's Gallery. And I remember when I worked at Sotheby's, I was interning. I interned at Sotheby's in San Francisco. And I remember looking over the magazines and I loved all the catalogs, you know, for the exhibits, you know, but they had everything, everything, everything. They had Chinese snuff bottles and mid-century planes, and they had everything from art to jewelry to 17th century Dutch masters. And so I remember one day asking the director, where is the Black art catalog? And she said to me, I don't know. Maybe look in the primitive section.
Wow.
So I think that I've been happiest when I don't consider the art world when making decisions. And I get happier as time goes by. I get happier as time goes by. I don't care to necessarily impress in that regard or succeed necessarily in that way. I love starting with the question, what is it that you want to do? And just doing that, you know, and kind of keeping the voices out of my head as much as possible, because I know they're there. I know they're always there. But I'm interested in having those conversations amongst my community, my family, my people.
Yeah, I love that. I've had a similar experience. So I went to school for filmmaking and I had a film of mine. I didn't realize it was an art film until they were like, hey, you have this art film. I just thought it was a film. But ended up in a couple exhibits when I got there and looked at the makeup of the room and the people who were trying to have conversations about it. It's like, I'm not really feeling this. I don't want to explain it in these ways. I want people to feel it. And so I felt, as you mentioned, most comfortable, most fulfilled in our community sharing that work. And that's who it's meant for. I assume that what you shared and what I shared is pretty common. Do you hear that type of sentiment from folks that you're also in communication with that are Black artists?
I do. I absolutely do. And I also hear, you know, conversations and witness, you know, movement where artists are, you know, striving for that kind of it, you know, that it factor, you know, striving to position themselves to kind of be the darling of the art world and working at how they've, you know, learned to present and work. And I get it. I love and I welcome anyone, you know, who feels something when looking at my work. And I love it that it has that effect, you know, and I do feel like it's meant to keep company. But I understand on a very deep level that my work comes from a place where, you know, my people is all I need. I think it's true, you know, art is for the people. It is not a luxury. I kind of want to start there. Like, I don't believe that art is a luxury item. A Black artist will do a piece about sharecroppers, and that piece will then sell for $1 million. You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, that energy that's in that piece is now hanging somewhere. It's blessing some space, you know, that doesn't understand it completely. And that's why I believe in prints. I believe, because I believe that we should have access to the work by our artists. I mean, that's what it's for. I believe in public art for the same reason.
You know, in what ways are you seeing folks creating their own table, in addition to obviously what you're doing with Iconic Black Panther?
There's so many people doing so many things. I mean, you know, it's like technology being what it is. It's like every year is a new era. Like, people are describing and, I mean, they're figuring out ways to exhibit and share their work that don't involve the same middle entities, you know, social media being what it is, and how it evolves and how artists, you know, utilize it to share their work. We can have the exact conversations that we want to have. We're not building something for an Oscar or those particular accolades. We're building something to reach our people. And then it's accessible by everyone in some way, fashion, or form via social media. I don't know how it's going to end up, but I feel very strongly that the powers that be are going to have to meet us where we are. They're going to have to meet us where we are, as opposed to, you know, what has been happening, which is we meet them where they are and satisfy, you know, whatever those, you know, kind of elusive checkoff points are to be what we're supposed to be so that we can, you know, we're nice and polished and pretty and we sell, we're marketable. This is what I am witnessing. This is what I see. And I think that that's going to be a huge shift. The social dictates will be dictated by the people.
Was there artwork in your home growing up? Were you influenced by art? And I ask because I know in every Black household I grew up in, there was some of the classics, you know, a painting of Martin Luther King or the one with the two Black hands, one reaching up, one reaching down. I forget what it's called. But there's some that you commonly see in Black households. Recently, I saw one of Obama washing people's feet as if he was Jesus or something.
Oh, wow. I love it.
did that, that type of artwork, seeing that around you, it inspire you in any way coming up?
Yes. I was a military brat. So until I was six, I was overseas. And my clearest memories are Greece. It's really interesting living in a place where people are speaking another, people all around you are speaking another language, right? So we're very young kids, so we learned the language. But in our house and my father's friends, you know, we had a community. You know, there were a lot of Black folks in the military. We went to school on military base, that kind of thing. My father had a painting and it's in our house still. It's in the closet, but my father, someone gifted him this painting, but there was large nude in our living room, a black nude. And she was this dark-skinned sister with a straight ponytail pulled back. And like there was this metal cuff in the painting that was holding her ponytail back. And she was facing to the side. And she was standing in this really strange position. She had her hands on her thighs. You know, she was like almost like bent a little bit. But it's so interesting, that piece and the fact that my sister, who's 3 years older than me, taught me how to draw. That's how we played. Is she'd be like, come on, I'm gonna show you how to draw a hand. Or I'm gonna show you how to draw, you know, a tree or whatever. And it got to the point with me and my sister where we'd be talking about something and she'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. Where? And I'd be like, oh, over there by that red house. And she'd be like, draw it. What did it look like? What, you know? So that was kind of early on a way of communicating for me. And then our babysitter in Greece, Anastasia, Greek young lady, she drew. And so it was always something, you know, in me to do. It's funny, my sister taught me how to draw. She's a teacher now. So I'm like, oh, she was being a teacher then, you know, she was just meeting me where I was. And it was always a part of my life as far as I can remember. And also, I do want to say this. My father was a DJ in the military. And so there was always music in our house. Like his radio show was called This Is Soul in Greece. So, you know, we cannot forget that album covers, album covers. And he had so many albums. So, yes, I had really serious and intense visual influences.
What would you say is the value of really having art in your home in terms of liberation or culture, identity? What value can the everyday person have from embracing Black art?
Let me just say this. I went away to high school. I went to a boarding school. And most of the time at that school, there were only 200 students total. And I went straight from Compton to that boarding school. And my best friend, she was from Watts. And so she used to get Ebony and Essence magazines. And, you know, you remember how Ebony and Essence used to have the Varnett Honeywood or different artists. They would just have little tiny, you know, they just have pictures of their work in the magazine and you could maybe purchase prints or things like that. She would cut those little, so it would be like, what, 2 by 3 inches, you know? She would cut those out and tape them to her door. And her door was catty corner to mine. And so that's the first thing she would see when she would go in her room, right, is this Black art. And that's what I would see going into my room. And I cannot tell you how we had each other, and that was a beautiful thing. But also having that work, that's why I always say that art keeps company, you know, is because I know that firsthand. You know, it lifts the spirit. It's the same as, you know, putting on your headphones when you're on a subway or when you're in a place where you know you're not welcome. You know what I mean? And you can hear your music in your head. You're not alone. So it keeps company. And I do think that's important.
And just like that, we're at the end of this episode of Black History Year. This podcast is produced by Push Black, the nation's largest nonprofit Black media company. At Push Black, we agree with Marcus Garvey when he said, "A people without knowledge of their past, history, origin, and culture is like a tree without roots." And I'm guessing you probably feel like that's important too. I mean, here you are at the end of a podcast about Black history. You matter. Your choice to be here matters. It lets us know that you value this work. Push Black exists because we saw we had to take matters into our own hands. You make Push Black happen with your contributions at blackhistoryyear.com. Most folks do $5 or $10 a month, but everything makes a difference. Thanks for supporting the work. The Black History Year production team includes Tariq Alani, Patrick Sanders, Abani Jones, William Anderson, Jerea Bradley, Brooke Brown, Shonda Buchanan, Brianna Lambach, Courtney Morgan, Akuya Tate, Tasha Taylor, Leslie Taylor Grover, and Darren Wallace. Producing and editing the podcast, we have Sydney Smith and Ivana Tucker. Julian Walker is the executive producer of the podcast. And I'm Jay from Push Black. Thanks for checking us out.